Donald in the Kitchen talks about food. Donald in the Kitchen talks recipes. Donald in the Kitchen talks about lots of other things on Community Radio. Welcome to the Donald in the Kitchen. My name is Lana Noctigal.
And I'm Donna Priskintos.
We gather here once a week to talk about food, farming advice, recipes, and opinions. We gather here around our kitchen table at KHOI Community Radio in beautiful downtown Ames, Iowa. But today, we're going to talk about water, specifically what's in the water and
besides the H2O.
Oh, there's that stuff too. Yeah. And people have been getting interested in water, not just because of the fact it is summer and hot and parts of our country are experiencing drought, but there have been studies done. And so we'll be talking about that. But first I want to share a news item from our news department. Tick-a-tick-tick-a-tick-tick-a-tick-tick-tick-tick. That's the ticker tape from the Dunnellon Kitchen News Desk. Yes, everyone is talking about water. Iowa State University Extension, believe it or not, produced a musical, and it's a big hit. Now, you wouldn't think that Iowa State University Extension would be producing a musical, but this is a great way to teach people about water. The musical is called Water Rocks, and it is a way to teach about science and fun and hands-on learning activities. It's been a real fine thing that they're doing, and it's available for free for communities to put on. It is a educational tool.
Is it aimed at children or everybody?
It's a children's thing, but like a magic school bus and all
those
things.
Oh, the whole family.
Yeah, whole family. They've outreached to about 180 Iowa schools each year, and they think that Water Rocks, it's been going a while, has impacted more than 160,000 youth and has been in Iowa Hub Public Schools and going great guns. So, there's a water thing. Water Rocks, the musical. Well, today on the Donald in the Kitchen, as I said, we are going to talk about water. And joining us today is Pat Schlarbaum, a professional conservationist, retired. He has a lot to say about what goes on in the world around us. Welcome, Pat.
Thank you for this opportunity to be in your award-winning presence. It's,
and he's charming too. Did we tell you that?
and presence. We are actually here around the kitchen table together. Yeah. Welcome. This is good. Well, there's been quite a kerfuffle. Kerfuffle is an official term here in Ames because people are testing the water. And the city of Ames issued a Ames Water Alert. Can you tell us a little bit about that, Pat?
We have been learning about the PFAS or forever chemicals from Local Talk and John Dunn. And, you know, we've been listening to the experts. And so not being a water expert, but let's say someone who believes in the sacredness of water, we can all benefit from not taking water for granted. And
we like to drink it, we like to swim in it, we like to bathe in it.
We like to appreciate water in all its ramifications, even ice on a hot day. It's one of those things that on the planet, it's pretty important. I mean, there was a Standing Rock delegation of individuals that stood up for clean water. And it would be good to point out that, you know, our indigenous friends, they've kind of set the course for honoring water. Miniwichoni is the term that they use. Sacred water. So all of a sudden now we start hearing about something new, a PFAS or a forever chemical in our water. PFAS is an acronym for a polyfluoroalkaloid.
Ah.
Yeah, one of those 25-cent terms. But a little of it goes a long ways.
And when we say forever chemicals, it means it's there forever. It doesn't biodegrade. Even if you don't want it, it ain't going away.
Yeah, it appears in our water whenever you see kind of like a rusty appearance. Apparently that's magnesium.
And it's not iron?
It's maybe it's connected to the iron, you know, the on this chemical structure. Mm-hmm. And that's one of the things I understand, that there's a bond between the fluorides and the carbons that is so intense that they don't degrade. So essentially then they bioaccumulate. Now, this was a term that we all kind of started listening to growing up with the DDT, that it bioaccumulates. Mm-hmm. It's not just that a little of it is harmful or is acceptable, but over time. And so, again, and maybe it's a little bit like the radon thing that hit everybody's radar 30 years ago, that it was there, we didn't know about it, and then people started looking at it and said, whoa.
Well, the negative here is that they are carcinogenic. Yeah. They can cause you cancer.
And the positive thing is, with our Ames administration, is they're being totally transparent
yeah.
about it.
Yeah. They're handling it very well.
And to their credit. Yeah. And so we're hearing more and more. But I think recently, the EPA, you know, they're involved.
Environmental Protection Agency.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a threshold that was deemed acceptable, if that's a term that you
right.
kind of have to use with a little grain of salt there. But all of a sudden then they said, well, those levels are really not low enough. So they've dropped it.
And this happened like last week, all of a sudden they decided that it was, the standards that they'd maintained for a long time were too high, and all of a sudden, whoa.
Yeah, so to your credit here on the Lana Donna Kitchen Show, you know, that you are bringing these issues to the forefront, like you do so well on so many different levels.
Thank you. Well, it affects my food, for goodness sake, you know. If it's got to do with food, we talk about it.
Exactly. So,
have we figured out, is this just a big bloom of stuff in Ames, or are these PFAs showing up all over the place?
No, I'm understanding with communication with Claire Hubey is with the Department of Natural Resources. And no, it is statewide. In fact, it's nationwide.
In fact, it's probably global.
So with that, it's not that we're just picking on certain aspects of Ames, but again, Ames is involved because it was detected in some of our wells. And I guess there's 22 total wells, I believe.
Where does our local water come from?
Well, there's a Jordan aquifer that, is beneath the Skunk River. They say that what we see of the Skunk River is just the tip of the iceberg, if you will, on the water that is circulating through this Iowa landscape, underneath the Iowa landscape. So apparently it's in that Jordan aquifer.
Well, then, okay, for example, if they found one of the wells has the contamination, they, quote, shut it down. But if it's connected to the aquifer, that water doesn't just sit in that well that we've shut down, does it?
I'm not qualified to speculate at that. But I think what it amounts to is that there are certain areas that are impacts on the surface, because this is not only in the skillets that don't stick, and it's in our apparel, you know, and anything to do with rain gear. It pops up there. It lasts a long time. And apparently the fire retardant industry has been remiss in promoting something that, and without the testing, or now they've come to realize that's the source of a lot of the problems, mm-hmm. is in the fire retardant.
That is amazing, because when a fire is going on, the last thing you want to say is, let's stop. Let's sort of test this stuff. It was a miracle that there were fire retardant chemicals that could deal with these huge, huge fires. Oh, how wonderful.
Yeah.
But now we're finding out, mm-hmm. We got a little bit more than we bargained for. And actually here in this area, there is a fire school. I mean, people come here to practice that
train
sort of
the firemen. Yeah.
Okay, mm-hmm. So that's why things are a little concentrated here in a little part of town. It's
apparently,
a little bit
there are some parts of Ames that are more susceptible to the levels that are unacceptable. So they have, it's my understanding, they are turning off some of of the wells.
Ah,
at least one in particular.
A little too much of a good thing. You mentioned, Donna, what are some of the things that have these PFAs in them?
Okay.
Besides, it gets in the water, but how do they
get
there?
I mean, you kind of get discouraged because they are everywhere, and at this point, all of us probably have, I mean, I can't even imagine there's anybody pure enough and clean enough left on, at least in our culture, that doesn't have some in their bodies. But the idea is to have less of them or as few as possible. So there are some things. First of all, they are now saying, and I was kind of unhappy about this, in some communities, although in Ames we seem to have a government that's being very proactive, but some of the things I was reading, the community is saying, well, I guess you better filter your drinking water, right? Mm-hmm. So, which puts it back on the consumer, which is fine if you can afford to go out and get a filter, like a reverse osmosis filter or even mm-hmm. some of the carbon-based filters. But, you know, if you're... It's not that pricey, but it's another thing that in these inflation-driven days you have to do and put it back onto the consumer. But in addition to the water, there are a lot of other sources that just like the... Remember when we started talking about the PBA, which is another chemical that's, for example, in the linings of tin cans. If you buy a can of beans, unless it says on the label outside non-PBA liner... this is in that, or the plastic lids on the containers that you store your food in. Those could have PBAs in them. So as we learn to like work around that, there are some things that you can do. And of course, my usual favorite go to is the environmental working group. So to pull up this list, I Googled PFAS space EWG, right? And it came right up. So that's the Environmental Working Group's Guide to Avoiding the PFAS Chemicals. It says they're used in the coatings on carpets and clothing, in microwave popcorn bags, in fast food wrappers. Most waterproof or stain-repellent clothing is coated with them. And they mentioned some brand names. Fabric that may be labeled as Teflon, Scotchgard, Stainmaster, Polartec, or Gore-Tex. Now, probably everybody has a raincoat hanging at home in their closet that has Gore-Tex in it or something. And please, I don't even know what you should do with these things, because if you put them in the Ames trash, they're going to go in the incinerator, then they're going to get burned, and they are forever chemicals. So they will go somewhere that you don't want them. So they... So the Environmental Working Group had, here's tests by Greenpeace. They found PFAS chemicals in jackets made by North Face, Patagonia, Adidas, Columbia, Jack Wolfskin, shoes, all right, ready for this, you teenagers or mothers of teenagers, shoes from Nike, Puma, and Adidas. swimwear from Disney and Burberry. This is just a tiny group. And they also note, the wristbands of the new Apple Watch sports model is also made with PFAS chemicals. What were they thinking? I don't know.
Well, they weren't thinking. Because evidently this is sort of a new development. Or, there we go.
Yeah, well, they'll have to get rid of those. Now, everybody probably is, most people at this point are aware that, you know, don't use your Teflon pans. There are some new nonstick ones. I actually decided I should have a new skillet, and I was looking at, there are some newer kinds of chemicals for nonstick, so some of those are okay and some of them aren't, and I had a hard time sorting through it. So anyway, I am getting a new frying pan. Once I get it, I will report back. I'm buying a steel carbon, which has no coating on it, so you have to, you know, make your own coating. But avoid the nonstick pans or kitchen utensils that are PTFE based.
Okay.
Be wary of fabrics labeled stain or water repellent. Okay, now here's the big one, everybody. Cut back on fast food and greasy carryout foods. These foods often come in PFAS-treated wrappers. So if you're buying like the pizza box, okay, everybody knows pizza is greasy. They put a coating on the inside of the box so it doesn't soak through the cardboard. So that is, you know, the Chinese takeout boxes, right? All of those things. Now, milk cartons, for example, I hope, used to be always treated with wax. That's different. But wax can't take heat. So anything that's for hot and greasy food quite likely has the PFAS in it. Also, another one, microwave popcorn bags are coated with it, too. So, you know, get a hot air popper or go back to the skillet method where you shake it around and it's got a lid on it or something like that, because we don't want to give up our popcorn. Mm-hmm. Now, the other place, and Environmental Working Group also has a list on all kinds of body and personal care products, because a lot of them do contain this. Here's two that they mentioned. The Oral-B Glide Floss, which is made by Gore-Tex, is one example of dental floss. Right. Just stick that in your mouth and wrap it around, right? The other one I had read about was, okay, ladies, I'm sorry to tell you this, because I grew up with, when I was young and used mascara, you know, if you get it wet, it runs down your face, right? So then they invented a waterproof mascara. Guess what they used in that product? PFAS, okay? So you might want to give up your waterproof mascara. I know these are hard choices, but, and then this is strictly our bummer news section. So, you know, but the idea is to, what is it called? The body burden, right? Have less of a body burden of pesticides and toxics. So just think of it how these are burdening your body. And of course, the less you have of them in your body, and there are only some sources you can control. So, but these are a few things that you might want to try to avoid, you know, try telling your teenager to, you know, skip the pizza, but what are you going to do?
It makes me wonder if what the alternative products, in marketing will create.
There will be.
That's a marketing opportunity.
It's the American way, but we'll see.
Yeah, give him a few years, though.
So what do the people from the city of Ames suggest? They mentioned filters, but are they doing something to mitigate anything?
They're studying it, right?
Again, I'm probably not qualified, or I wouldn't care to speculate on that, other than they are researching it, mm-hmm. and being open and very transparent about
that. Right. They've been very good about letting us all know that, oops, we have a problem here.
We have a situation that's somewhat pervasive to most communities.
Yes.
It's kind of new to our radar system.
And they are, they did shut down that one well.
Yeah. Apparently. Yeah. Yeah. I've heard that secondhand, but
I saw it in the newspaper.
Good, yeah. Oh, okay. Well, I should read the newspaper better. I think this gets into that category of you don't get something for nothing, or there's a trade-off to everything. And fire retardant has been a very, very big campaign of not necessarily fear, but we're not working with fire, so often we're fearing it. And here's an example of a product that was designed to address those fears, and now we're seeing
it. So if the fire department comes to put out a fire at your house, they don't just spray water on everything? I mean, when I was growing up, you know, think of the Disney, mm-hmm. Where they used the elephants to shoot the water at the fire, right? Fire hose.
That was quite a while ago, Donna. I don't think they do that anymore.
I'm showing my age here. Okay. So we don't use water to put fire out anymore, right?
Yeah.
Although, when I lived in California, right, forest fires, and there were some ripping forest fires, one of the most really dramatic things is they use these big kind of helicopter things. They go out into the ocean, they scoop up a lot of water, mm-hmm. and then they just drop it on it. And that's, I mean, we don't know what's in the ocean either, but it's water to put out fires. So I hope that's still what we mostly use.
There's a lot of fire retardant I happen to know because I have a brother and sister-in-law in firefighting.
Oh.
And in the Western fires. And there's a lot of stuff that gets put in airplanes and dropped.
Oh,
yeah. Mm-hmm.
Oh, some funny colored stuff sometimes, too.
Funny colored stuff. So, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. They said it's kind of like Jell-O. It's really thick and gooey, and it's called your fire retardant is what it is.
Well, and we also, the poor firefighters that have all been unknowingly handling this stuff for years and out of their, mm-hmm. you know, service to the rest of the community, this is really unfortunate.
Oh, I presume that they're going to be looking at those families and
What is the result of ingesting or having too much PFAS?
I don't know. Does it go in through your skin? Do you breathe it? Does it go in?
I'm not sure what the symptoms are, but they're very concerned about the infants.
Ooh.
And it has an infant quality. If you're using water in their formula and that sort of thing, that it seems like that's pretty prevalent in the literature about this topic.
I have to say, when my son, who is now about 40, was a baby, there was a requirement that all children's sleepwear made in the United States had to have fire retardant on it.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm. Right. So mm-hmm. You know, being the mad hippie that I was and was trying to avoid chemicals like that, that even then I was suspicious about, I used all European cotton pajamas. But you could not, even to import them, they could not be labeled as pajamas. They had to be playwear or something like
really?
That.
Really?
Oh, interesting.
Yep. Yeah. So putting it right next to the skin of all of the children. Mm-hmm. We have a long and difficult history, at least with most of us that are alive, with these kinds of mm-hmm. of things.
When there were forest fires in the Yellowstone area 25 years ago, and it burnt, and in reading about that, there was some reference to tarps that were fire retardant tarps that industry had really stepped up and were providing those for certain areas and in the firefighting capabilities. And I thought, wow, somewhere there's a warehouse and it's filled with these tarps and they've been used a few times. And I wonder if they'd be available so that when we burn our prairies, we could wrap the telephone poles or wrap the corner post. You know, and I tried to research it to find out where that warehouse was that had all these available, you know, maybe, you know, through state appropriations, we could have a memorandum of agreement and
we could
get a bunch
them.
Of things. But see, there again, it was like a product and, oh, well, it's got to be good.
A product that's
but
a solution
now,
for something.
Yeah, but as we kind of sit back, you go, mm-hmm. well, anything at all, just be cautious or be a little bit open-minded to the fact that there might be some trade-offs.
Here's where the precautionary principle could come into play, which is a kind of like the, if you don't know for sure, then maybe you should be careful.
Mm-hmm.
Because often science doesn't have the complete picture, mm-hmm. right? And there are unintended consequences for things like this. Mm-hmm. And, you know, this is not the only time this is going to happen in the history of human innovation.
Right.
One of the things that I've been trying to read, and of course there's not enough known yet, but we're inventing all these geoengineering techniques to deal with carbon sequestration. And a lot of them we don't know ultimately what happens. You know, it's like the human species has a certain amount of brilliance and we come up with these things, but our capacities are so finite compared to the amount of the complexity of the universe, let's say, right? You know, there's just things we're not clever enough to think about.
Oh, that's right, Donna. That's why I love your program so well, so much. You bring out these points.
Yeah, we're a little skeptical. Yeah, I mean, a little skepticism doesn't hurt. And this is a good story about that. You know, we thought this was a product that was going to be really helpful. We used it a lot. And then, you know, 50 years later, like, whoopsie, it's given cancer to people. Who knew, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, so we need to be careful about these things.
Yes, we do. Well, we're going to talk more about this. But first I want to say this is KHOI, and this is the Donna Lana Kitchen, Tasty Radio for the Heart of Iowa.
Welcome back. This is the Donna Lana Kitchen. We're talking about what in the world is in the water lately. Not just lately. It's been there a while. We're just discovering it. And about time we do, too. That tune was called In the Rain, speaking of water things, by the Barn Owl Band. We'll have some more music from them later. As we're talking about this problem of PFAS, PFAS.
Is that how you say it?
PFAS.
How are they referred to? PFAS?
Polyfluoroalkyloids.
Okay, but for those of us that are never going to remember that, it does not roll off of my tongue.
It will. We'll talk about it more.
PFAS. They're
PFAS.
Forever.
Okay, PFAS.
Oh, good.
How about PU, PFAS?
Good, Donna. Good. Joining us at the kitchen table today is Pat Schlarbaum, a water advocate, as we all are if we only think about it for just a minute. Well, when we get into scientific studies, you talk about parts per million, parts per trillion, and really, truly, little bitty bits make a difference. And that's why there is a renewed interest in what is in our water, because evidently the parts per trillion, parts per million have gone up. So it's sometimes hard to figure out what a million is, what a trillion is, what a gazillion is. What exactly does that mean? I've been reading a book called, and this is an old book, it's been around for a while, it's called I'm a Stranger Here Myself, Notes on Returning to America After 20 Years Away by Bill Bryson. Bill Bryson.
A fine Iowa fellow.
A nice curmudgeon. He grew up in Des Moines and went off and did a lot of things. He wrote the book A Walk in the Woods, which was turned into a movie. But this is a little collection of his curmudgeonly look at things. And he was looking at the national debt. And this was written quite a while ago. So his trillion is not as big as trillions now. But he... How do you get your mind around this, okay?
You don't.
But here, gives us, in two little paragraphs here, gives us some advice. Well, this is what Bill Bryson says. Let's just try to grasp the concept of $1 trillion. Imagine that you're in a vault filled with dollar bills and that you were told you could keep each one you initialed. Say, too, for the sake of argument, that you could initial $1 bill per second and that you work straight through without ever stopping. How long do you think it would take to count a trillion? Go on. Humor me. Take a guess. 12 weeks? 2 years? 5? If you initialed $1 per second, you would make $1,000 every 17 minutes. After 12 days of nonstop effort, you would acquire your first $1 million. Thus, it would take you 120 days to accumulate $10 million and 1,200 days, something over 3 years, to reach $100 million. And after 31.7 years, you would become a billionaire. Billionaire.
And this is nonstop, right?
Nonstop.
No bathroom breaks.
And after almost 1,000 years, you'd be maybe as wealthy as Bill Gates. But not until after 31,709.8 years would you count your 1 trillionth dollar.
Oh, and gazillions of trillions. Yeah, oh, my mind.
And that's just kind of a little bite of our current debt. Anyway, just to kind of give you something to keep you up at night there, that's what 1 trillion is.
Oh, yeah. Our mere mortal minds. I guess when they throw those figures around, it's obviously incomprehensible, really.
It is.
Leave it to the computers, right?
Well, and the thing is, we seem to be... going on, okay. Remember that money is a mind construct. It's not a real thing. It's what we agree money is. So
right. We don't even probably have a place to stack up that many $1 bills.
I don't think so either.
That would take a lot of space.
Anyway, so a little mind game there, a bit of advice from Bill Bryson and from his book, I'm a Stranger Here Myself. There he is. We're back. This is the Dinah Lana Kitchen. We're talking about water. We're talking about water with Pat Schlarbaum. What do you have to say about parts per trillion and what's in our water, Pat?
Well, it's just fascinating that an analogy of the parts per quadrillion is what they're using now. That I think in this resurgence of the research that it just the semicolon or the dot and the decimal point and then the zeros. It's just incredible that, and we can almost kind of slough that off or skirt that aside. Like, oh, well, that's 1 second in 8 million years, you know, like a metaphor for that. And yet it also tells me that if it only takes that much to create a cause of concern in your liver or your kidney or your thyroid, that we should listen up and we should maybe start taking this to heart that and looking at the research. And a lot of the researchers are now saying that, you know, well, we know more today than we did yesterday, and we'll probably know more tomorrow. So it's not to deflect from the fact that scientists are taking this pretty seriously and are still gathering answers, if you will. We always want things consolidated or condensed down to the lowest common denominator.
Makes you wonder what else we don't know.
Well, it does that. It is humbling.
That's a good choice of words.
Well, it's the truth, though. But and I also look to a woman scientist mind, because it always seems like it's the guys that are trying to distill things down to the lowest common denominator. And then I always think of a woman's perspective as they're working it lower and lower to that common denominator. And then, but they're watching it shift. They're aware of the shift. Where the guys, we just on the straight line. You know, we just want to know that.
The numbers.
Right. Whereas women, or there's a maternal perspective, mm-hmm. if you will, that it'll shift. And yeah. That's how we learn. And that is science.
Anyway, definitely.
That was my own little promotion for listening to the women scientists.
Well, thank you very much. We're not scientists.
The maternal scientists.
Wonderful when we feel listened to, right?
Yes. Yes, we should listen
and
to
we like to say, I told you so.
Go ahead.
Well, because
go ahead, say it.
PFAS is the only thing that we have to work. There's all kinds of itty-bitty things that are floating around. We have no problem. Look at this new invention. How wonderful. We'll just make lots of it, and then we'll wash it down the river.
I saw that.
There's lots of stuff.
In the news the other day, they discovered, I think it was some kind of microbe, but they were so excited because it was big enough to be visible to the human eye. And I'm thinking, oh, it's the size of an eyelash. You know, they consider that enormous, right?
Well, we live in an amazing, amazing universe. There's lots of different things. And remember, speaking of liquid things, researchers have found plastic bits in our blood. Human blood has got, we have ingested all these things called microplastics. Speaking of small
things. There's probably
things,
PFAS in the microplastics.
And there's all kinds of things in there. Mm-hmm. And there's PEETs, PETs, and polystyrenes and polyethylenes. We've been just blissfully kind of sucking this stuff up for a long time. We're probably going to turn into a new species here before long. We don't even know that. That's good.
Plasticized robotic human beings, right?
Well, we could do that.
The ones that acclimate to it, I guess you're onto something. It's all in the acclimation.
Oh, goodness. Anything else you have to say about this topic, Pat?
Oh, my gosh. It's such a ponderous topic. Donna mentioned something good about how to dispose of some of these items and where that industry is going to take us, and parts per quadrillion in the smoke of if you try to incinerate these things.
So where are you going to put that Teflon pan that you need to get rid of?
So I would presume that the manufacturing of these items is going to be looked at initially, but then where they end up is going to be a real challenge. But in the American way, there should be some way to neutralize their impacts on the on the chemical horizon. We can only hope.
Well, there, I saw an article. Was it maybe in the Scientific? Don't quote me on this because I read this as much as I could find in the last few days to get ready for the show. And there is a new technology. It's not a new technology, actually, but high temperatures combined with pressure can actually apparently get rid of some of them. Of course, it's expensive. It is a known technology that God knows what they were using it for, but we do have that. So maybe they're not forever, but the problem is they're everywhere. What are we going to do, run our livers through this technology? Mm-hmm. I mean, I don't know how they'll even begin to apply. I mean, obviously, hopefully, we will kind of wind down the use of them and find some other thing that we can do that's maybe safer. But, you know, it's something obviously we've lived with for a while, and we'll have to continue. And just good luck to all of us. Let's try, you know, quit using those fast food wrappers, for example, and be careful what you floss your teeth with.
That's true. Remember, it's called Forever Chemicals. I think it's the article is in Scientific American, and it's a group in Germany that's working on high heat and extreme pressure to do this stuff to boil away these PFAS. Unfortunately, the technology is relatively complex and therefore very expensive. Okay, folks.
It is an important topic.
Yeah.
I guess I would say in credit to maybe we started with John Dunn and his effects of or his sharing his knowledge so well on local talk.
Now he's a city.
He is the water plant director.
Oh, okay.
He's our control.
Okay.
Yeah,
okay.
Pollution control.
So he's now a local hero.
He's a very prominent individual in the Ames community. And his product, you know, basically when we turn on the tap in Ames, Iowa, we get pretty good water. In some of the research I was looking at, that the water we get from our tap quite often is better than what they can sell for
$1.89 in the
fast food stores, which might equate to about $12 a gallon, you know, when we start thinking about money.
Yeah, yeah.
But they feel that so often the standards of the water that we buy at the fast food store is inferior to what we're getting from. So that's kind of an important detail.
That's good
news. It's important to point that out.
Absolutely.
That, you know, as we get kind of fearful of the water, but to keep up with these issues and to honor sacred water, I think is what I'd like to leave people with today.
That's very good. And also remember, if you're going to panic and go buy water,
no,
it's in plastic bottles, folks. So think a little bit. We have been leaching other things
into the bottle. Yeah, right.
Mm-hmm. That's true. Whew. Honoring our resources, and in this case, we have a heads up to our water quality, and we have to do a lot of thinking about where our resources come from. Anyway. Mm-hmm. Thank you for being with us today, Pat.
Oh, it's been my pleasure. Again, you're the award-winning host of a show that I remember learning about your carrot farmer.
Oh, Gary Guthrie, the Carrot King.
Yeah, and it was award-winning.
It was.
You've had some other awards, too. So you guys just do a fabulous job. So,
but we want to encourage you all to cook your own food so you don't have to worry about those fast food wrappers. We've been on about this for a long time. Cook your own food, right?
Yeah.
Be careful out there. Be careful out there. Yes. You're listening to KHOI. This is the Donalana Kitchen. For more information, go to khoifm.org. Thank you. Welcome back. This is the Donna Lana Kitchen. Lots to think about our water. What is in the water anyway? Because as Donna often, well, she says it often, it affects our food system and we all eat. Speaking of eating, Donna's got a recipe she would like to share, and I still haven't learned how to spell this, but tell us what you're going to talk about.
Okay, so we got to put a spoonful of sugar with all of this difficult messaging that we've been talking about unhappy things today and our bummer news. So I'm going to talk about clafouti, C-L-A-F-O-U-T-I. It is a sort of a French recipe, but the good news is it's really fast, it's really easy, and the basis of it is always fresh fruit. So it's basically, I would say it's like a custardy, crustless pie kind of thing. Mm-hmm. You take your pie pan and you grease it or butter it, and then you put the fresh fruit in it, and then you make a batter out of basically eggs, milk or cream, a little salt, some melted butter. You can flavor it with vanilla or almond extract or whatever, and of course sugar, right, and flour. And then you pour the batter over the fruit just as long as you grease the pan first. And then it bakes and it comes out. It's like the easiest, quickest kind of little pie thing. You take it out and you slice it up and you serve it like pie slices. So I've pulled up the King Arthur basic recipe, which calls for 3 cups of pitted fruit, butter the cake pan. Well, you can use a cake pan, but traditionally, really, it is a pie pan with the sloping sides kind of thing. And then, so you get the fruit peeled. Like, I'm going to do a peach clafouti because we're just at the beginning of peach season. So I will cut up my fruit, not too small, although berries are quite popular. I think the classic is cherries. But, so you cut up the fruit, 3 cups. Then in a bowl, you mix 3 eggs, 3/4 cup of milk or heavy cream. And really, it's just fine with milk. You don't have to go heavy on the fat. Pinch of salt, 2 tablespoons of melted butter. Now for they're saying vanilla extract or almond extract. With peach, I like to use just a little almond extract. And then only 1/2 cup of sugar, no big deal there. And then 3/4 cup of all-purpose flour. So you just mix the batter, you pour it over, and then you put it in the oven for 45 minutes until, you stick your cake tester in and it comes out clean. And then you remove it from the oven and you serve it in wedges, warm or at room temperature. And they do say a dab of whipped cream is entirely appropriate. But you know what? It's not necessary. And in the French tradition, they actually put a little powdered sugar on it. But I think it's perfectly sweet like that. So what I love about it is it's easy. It's not fussy. You can do it quickly for a simple dessert. And it is quite elegant. Nothing to be shy about. So clafouti, C-L-A-F-O-U-T-I, is a good dessert for using all these summer fruits that we have coming in.
Sounds good. It's got a good summer treat. Sounds like a good use for some of those summer berries and summer fruit coming up. Oh, peaches. Oh,
I know.
Peaches.
I know. They're in now. The Georgia peaches I've been buying locally are quite good.
We've had a lot of bummer news. The EPA had something about they're looking into glyphosate.
Yes, finally some encouraging news. We've been talking a long time about glyphosate this and the court cases that are going on and the individuals that have been suing because they've gotten cancer from glyphosate. And we've even quoted Chuck Benbrook, who's a well-known scientist, Dr. Chuck Benbrook, who was in the glyphosate case in California with the groundskeeper who sued because he's dying of cancer from the glyphosate. So Dr. Benbrook was the authority that testified about the dangers of glyphosate. We've had him on the show. The good news is the first U.S. Court of Appeals and the Ninth Circuit found multiple flaws in the EPA's 2020 glyphosate assessment and ordered the agency to reassess glyphosate's links to cancer and harm to endangered species. This is a big deal. The European Union has been phasing out glyphosate. Mexico wants to get rid of glyphosate. In fact, part of their thing with trying to not do genetically modified corn is because that is a heavy user of glyphosate. Believe me, in Ames, we live in an ocean of glyphosate because it is the chemical that is sprayed on, you know, it's the weed killer that the corn and soybeans are tolerant to. So there is a lot of it around here. The Supreme Court, and this is just this week this happened, they also upheld a $25 million verdict that found that Roundup, which is what is glyphosate, was a substantial factor in one man's cancer, and the Bayer Monsanto failed to warn the public of the risks. So these are two recently decided issues that are saying, yes, we do think glyphosate is a problem.
Good. A little bit of a turnaround and some not-so-bummer news. Thank you, Donna. What things that
I mean, it's a bummer that, you know, like the PFAS, we're living with this, but there is some progress in looking at the science and reevaluating the, you know, the health effects of these widespread, widely spread, highly used chemicals.
Oh, dear.
That we are apparently not good for us.
Right. I mean, even with all the things that we are ingesting, we realize we are a part of this. We're a part of this world too.
Well, yeah, there's glyphosate has been found in cereals and things, because not only is it used as an herbicide on corn and soybeans, and probably that's what concerns us, right? It's also used as a desiccant. Like if the grains are harvested and they're too wet, they just put some glyphosate on it, and it, rather than use the high heat, expensive drying process, you just put this chemical on. So hopefully we can all be sadder but wiser, and it is really helpful that we've had these court rulings. It takes.
We are learning new things, yep. And thank goodness. Well, here we are kind of in the middle of summer, and it's getting hot and summer-ish, although we've had beautiful firefly evenings yet.
Fireflies came with the mosquitoes.
Welcome to summer.
Count your blessings. So.
Welcome to summer. And the 4th of July is coming up.
Oh, boy, oh, boy.
And I've noticed some more news items, but kind of just across the board on the TV and on the news internet and all sorts of things. Fireworks are always a big thing.
We have great fireworks here, yes. In Ames, as probably lots and lots of other communities. Is it? It's on a Monday this year, isn't it?
I believe so. Yeah, well, there we go.
Oh, so three-day weekends,
fireworks
everybody.
Are pretty. Yeah. Fireworks are pretty, but I could do without the noise, and I'm sure a lot of your pet owners out there could realize your pets could do without the noise too, but there it is. That is what it is. But I noticed a strange little trend happening. News items that fireworks are getting bigger and better, and there are more and more outlets just in this next week to buy fireworks for yourself, not the professional,
the backyard kind.
Yeah, the backyard kind, and. But there's more and more, and they're bigger and bigger. Just in our small town alone, this year there will be 10 separate outlets, tents in parking lots that you can go out and get yourself some fireworks. That's all well and good. However, folks, remember, it is illegal to set those things off in town. I don't know. You got your catch-22
here. You can buy them here, but where are you supposed to set them off?
That's how it is in all of it. Well, each town has sound and nuisance ordinances, and there's a lot of cities that, oh, yes, we'll set up a tent and sell you fireworks and these people come in, but you cannot set them off in town. They're loud. They're dangerous. They're wonderful. Yes, I love what they look like, but be aware that you cannot set them off in town, which brings up the issue of where are you going to set them off? And speaking as someone...
In Lana's backyard.
That's it. Speaking as someone who lives on the edge of town in a rural area, things get a little noisy and interesting over the next week.
Does it scare the sheep?
Oh, I don't know. Sheep, I think, their species have been around so long, they don't care. But you know, the dogs and the cats and the chickens definitely don't like
it.
Well,
I'm a fan of sparklers.
Oh, I love sparklers.
I love sparklers.
But yes.
And they don't make much noise.
No. Be careful out there. Let's celebrate 4th of July. Have some pretty things happening. I like that. And there's 4th of July celebrations all over. You got their parades and your fireworks and your barbecues and things. And we got a little notice through the Practical Farmers of Iowa listserv, the website. Ron Rossman sent a little note around that the city of Westphalia in Shelby County, Iowa, is celebrating 150 years this Saturday and Sunday, July 2nd and 3rd, and they will be having a big sesquicentennial, I think, a big celebration there, 4th of July.
It's little town, big celebration.
It's a small town, but people come, there'll be a parade, there'll be a chicken dinner later in the day, and...
A tractor parade, I believe, right?
Yes, there will be a historical exhibit. There will be all kinds of old farm equipment there, historic celebration there. And Ron mentions here that our son David suggested that we just bring up all the equipment that we're still using. It's all pretty old. We'll just line it up there. And then that's farm machinery and farm shop tools. And anyway... The town of Westphalia, it's a town of 130 people.
That's pretty western Iowa,
yeah.
Right?
It's on the National Register of Historic Places because of its German Catholic immigration helped to settle western Iowa. So, celebrate the 4th of July out there. That's very good. Have a good one. And keep your eyes out for more news about what's in our water. Well, thanks to Pat Schlarbaum for joining us today. We learned about PFAS, P-F-A-S, so keep your eyes open for that. You've been listening to the Donna Lana Kitchen. We come to you at noon, live here on KHOY Community Radio. And thanks for your support. This is Community Radio. We had music today by the Barn Owl Band, some water music. You heard In the Rain and Over the Waterfall. Yes. My name is Lana Mastigal.
And I'm Donna Prisgintas.
We've had excellent engineering by Mike Murphy. Eat good food and enjoy life.